think we're halfway through post Pesach by now. So you have to do Sfiras Omer half the Pesach. Okay, so we left off yesterday, just trying to give a little bit of a background into this halacha of achilas haroi. It's a very, very strange thing. Here we have a mitzvah midaraisa. A guy eats in a manner that he's not supposed to be doing outside the sukkah. So that's a bitl mitzvah deraisa. And yet we have these very, very ambiguous definitions as to what kind of achilas mechayev in sukkah, what kind of achilas not mechayev in sukkah. The reason for this ambiguity is that, as we pointed out yesterday, this is not a function of achila. It's not a mitzvah achila basufka. It's a notion of yeshiva. Yeshiva is defined by dira. Now we're trying to fine-tune what is called the ma'aseh dira, what's not called the ma'aseh dira. And the Rishonim tell us that the only thing we have to go on is, well, what does the person do in the house all year long? What kind of activities are very, very house-associated in? And what kind of activities can we justify as being unhouse-associated? And if it's unhouse-associated, then there would not be any chiyuv deraisa of dira, no chiyuv deraisa of yeshiva. So the Mishnah has this distinction between achilas kev and achilas haroi. And we saw yesterday that there are two different levels of, two different layers of defining whether something is achilas kev and achilas haroi. One is in terms of volume of food, and the other is in terms of type of food. So in terms of volume of food, even though the Gemara had a lot of trouble with that, but finally the maskanas of Gemara was, the cutoff point is kibbetz of od, a little bit more than a kibbetz is already considered to be achilas kevah. But the problem is, the Gemara was only talking about bread. And what about other kinds of foods? So maybe one could take the attitude that you can eat, the sky's the limit, you can eat whatever you desire. And other foods, maybe other foods by definition, can never qualify as achilas kevah. One could have taken that approach. What led us to believe that is not true? So what led us to believe, what convinces us, the halacha, that that is clearly not correct, that there are other foods out there that are potentially in the parasha of keva, it's a very, very strange sugya. It's a strange sugya that focuses on a shita that we don't accept the halacha, and yet, as we find very, very often in learning, that from the shitas that we don't necessarily accept the halacha, we can extract a degree of truth, a degree of emes. Not that the sheet is not emes, but we can extract the degree of emes, the halacha lemais as well. Rashi writes in Maseches Ksubis, Naftan Zayin, that the principle of Elo Ve'elo Dibra Elokim Chayim, so Rashi writes, is that in this particular shayla that we're dealing with, there really is one correct answer and one incorrect answer. We paskin like the correct answer, we don't paskin like the incorrect answer. So why do we give such credibility to the quote-unquote incorrect answer? If you're saying that it's not MS, if it's not quote-unquote right, so then why is it part of Torah? Why are we spending time on sheetahs like that? So Rashi explains that in any given shayla, so there are so many different variables. You know, like we don't even think, you know, how complicated, you know, life is, how complicated halacha life is, for sure, that there are 100 factors that go into a particular psak. So it could be that the shita that came to conclusion X, Y, and Z was right on 99% of those variables, and then there's one nuance that may not be correct. There's one last piece that maybe is not right here, but, says Rashi, but it is right somewhere else. And if the other shita will change a little bit, and one of those variables won't be there, so then that will be the correct psak. So any shita that's come about from Tanoim, from Aroim, from Mishan, anything that comes about through a Torah delving into a sugya, so even though in the final outcome, it may not quote-unquote be correct, it doesn't mean that there's not 99.99% of truth that can be applied and will be relevant in other scenarios. So according to that understanding of Rashi, it makes a lot of sense that what we do all the time, the Gemara will sometimes spend a lot of time, we'll have shiurim all day about sheetahs that we don't accept the halacha. Why are we doing this for? So the answer is, even a sheet that we don't accept the halacha, it may not be right in this outcome, but there's so much truth there, we have to extract those kernels of truth that will help us in other cases. The Ridvan, has a different twist, the Gamin Eil, the Ridvan writes that it's not there's one right and there's one wrong. They're both right. Because the Torah was given, and Kodesh Baruch Hu's Chochmah was given in such a way that there are multiple truthful answers. It's something that's hard for us to fathom, but there are multiple truthful answers. in the olam of lomdus, in the olam of the world, the theoretical world of Talmud Torah, so you can have multiple answers that are both correct. Bishamay is not wrong. According to Rashi, Bishamay, I don't mean it's in a disrespectful way, but Bishamay's psak in this case is wrong. I mean, it doesn't mean that Bishamay aren't the greatest Talmud in the world. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't learn their story, their Torah. It doesn't mean that we can't extract 99.999%, but according to Rashi, that the Kavanas of Torah is X and not Y. According to the Ritva, the Kavanas of Torah is both X and Y. Either Beishami or Beisilo, either Rabbi Noravashi, either Rabbi Dan Ramedo, these are accurate, valid approaches to the Olam of Torah. In the Olam Ha'asiyah, so Kiddush Baruch wanted that the way the Jewish law plays out practically, there should be uniformity. So how do you reach uniformity? So you take all the potential theoretical possibilities out there, you discuss them, you debate them, and then you the dominion, then you vote, and that's what the Torah says. Keep You follow the robe of the Beis and Agadol, or if you don't have the Beis and Agadol functioning, so you follow the robe of the Chachmei HaTorah in that generation, and you come to a conclusion, and then everybody's doing the same thing. If for whatever reason you can't get the Olam together to vote, because some people live in Israel, some live in America, some don't want to vote on the topic, some are not, whatever the case may be. So if Ta'achas, you can't get that vote of a Beis and a Gadol, in sync, so then what do you do? So then every sheet remains as an authentic valid sheet, and I follow my sheet, you follow your sheet, you follow your sheet, and everyone's doing the right thing. It's not that one's right, one's wrong. So we live in a world that we haven't voted in about 1600 years or so. Last vote was Talmud Bavli. Since Talmud Bavli and the Rambam writes, we haven't had too many votes in the last 1500 years. So that's why we have all these strange things that Rashba saying this and Rashba saying this, Rabbi Tam saying this, Rashba saying that. So the Ritva says those are all, each one of those is a valid, legitimate Psak HaTorah, because the Torah is given al das that he can have multiple ways of getting to different conclusions, as long as all within sync, the same parameters of Chachmas HaTorah. So why am I giving you this whole introduction to Judaism? It's an interesting topic. But it's important here also because we're about to embark upon a sugya, which is one of the most lemaisa sugyas in Hilchos Sukkah, as to Achilles Haroi and Achilles Keva, and much of the discussion revolves around the shita that we don't even pass like. That was the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. So we mentioned yesterday that Rabbi Eliezer and Daf Chav Zayin has a mamish mechudish dikavort, multiple mechudish dikavorts in understanding what's going on in the midst of Yeshiva B'Sukkah. So one mechudish dikavort thing Rabbi Eliezer says is that you have to eat 14 meals in the Sukkah. You know, we don't have anywhere near that. We're 13 meals less than that, maybe, in B'Koshi. We all the first night, maybe, but the rest of the week, you're not mechuyav to eat in the Sukkah B'Chlal, if you choose not to eat food that's chayav in the Sukkah. But I don't even want to focus on that, because the Gemara is not even sure that Rabbi Eliezer sticks to that conclusion. I want to focus on another unbelievable chiddush Rabbi Eliezer says. Rabbi Eliezer says that there's a concept within the mitzvah of Sukkah called tashlumin. You could make up the mitzvah of Sukkah if you blew it, if you missed it. That's a startling concept, because most mitzvahs do not have that. Let's say, for example, a person missed Tkiah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So we just say, okay, no problem, no big deal. So you'll come back on Yom Kippur, blow Shofar on Yom Kippur, and you'll be, I'd say, Tashlumin for Rosh Hashanah. The guy missed Achilas Matz on Pesach, right? So when's he making up Rosh Hashanah on Yom Matzah? When does he make to eat the extra matzah? I'm saying, well, what's about Tashlumin? What's the Pesach Sheini? Pesach Sheini is the Tashlumin for covering Pesach, not for matzah. So I don't know. You have to eat matzah on Pesach Sheini with the covering Pesach, but that's a different story. So I don't understand exactly. So the starting point for all mitzvahs is all this concept of Tashlumin. And Rabbi Lez has this machurish tikkavot. You can make up, if you miss Sukkah, you can make it up. When do you make it up? So Blazer says, I'm on the thing. When do you make it up? Anyone know?
Last night.
On Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres. What am I making up? I don't know. Sukkah was last week. This is a Shmini Atzeres. What kind of joke is that? Where did Blazer get that idea of Tashlumin for the midst of Sukkah from? And why is the Tashlumin linked after the Shmini Atzeres? So clearly Rabbi Eliezer is learning that there is a certain degree of Tashlumin for Yom Tov and Dikim Mitzvahs. Let's say a person didn't bring his karbonos on the first day of the Sukkot. So what does he do? He brings it the whole week. And let's say he didn't make it till Shmini Atzeres. He's one of the latecomers. So he comes to Yerushalayim and Shmini Atzeres, and he brings his karbonos that he should have brought last week, and that's okay. The Gemara learns out from Pesukim. That's right. There's tashlumin for the karbonas hachag, for the karbonas yochid that each person brings on Yom Tov, the karbon chagiga, etc. He can be mashed to ben Shmini Atzeres. So really, as it says, we derive from the parish of tashlumin for karbonas that there's tashlumin for the mitzvah sukkah as well. Nobody else says like that. Okay, well, let's accept Rav Elazar's shita, okay? Then Rav Elazar goes one step further, and Rav Elazar says, okay, so the guy's sitting down on Shmini Atzeres, and he missed last week in the sukkah, and Hini Mucham Zumon, he's about to be yated a mitzvah of tashlumin. By doing what? Can someone tell me, what does he do exactly in order to do tashlumin for sukkah? What would you think if you were in Rabbi Eliezer's town right now, and a guy comes to you and says, last week I couldn't make it to the sukkah, something happened. Here I am, Shmini Atzeres night. Everybody else is doing what? Men deserve to stroll. So everyone's dancing at kofes, I don't know, we're doing whatever, we're having, you know, and he's making tashlumin for the sukkah. So first of all, where is this tashlumin taking place?
In the sukkah.
In the sukkah? Really? I have one word for that. Two words for that. You know what it's called? What? Isn't that Baltoise? Can't be in the sukkah after the sukkah is over. So obviously he's making a tashlumin where? In the house. So what's he eating? What's he doing? Last week he should have done what? He should have eaten what in the sukkah? Bread, right? So you tell him, sit down, have a piece of challah now, and have a Baruch Hashem dinner. What's the problem with that? But it's after sukkah, sir. So what exactly, what's going on? What's the thing here? So the Gemara has on Daf Chavzayin. The Gemara is inside Chavzayin and Aleph. I didn't put this part in my Mekomis, but the Gemara in Chavzayin and Aleph, it's about a little bit more than halfway down, the Onam Rabbi Eliezer. A little bit further than that, Ami is the first one line. About two-thirds of the way down. So the Gemara says, Mashlim v'mai, ilim v'rifta, if he's mashlim with bread, suda d'yayne ka'achil. That's today's meal. This is Shmini Atzeres' meal. What kind of tashlumin is that? If you're mechuyev to eat bread, al t'yom tip, so what kind of tashlumin is that? So the Gemara says, it must be that there are other foods out there that he's not really eating for this Yom Tov meal. He's having those special additional foods above and beyond the piece of challah that he's having. And those additional foods are counting for the tashlumin of the mitzvah sukkah that he missed last week. This is all Rabbi Eliezer. So in case everyone's looking at me like so perplexed. You know why you're looking at me perplexed? Because you don't recognize this religion. This is a different story. This is a different sukkah over here. Where you still, you know, you snooze, you lose. You missed the mitzvah sukkah. Come on, come back next year. Shmini Atzeres, tashlumin for sukkah, never heard of such a thing. Okay. Rabbi Eliezer told us that finished. Then Rabbi Eliezer is telling us that you can't use bread to be mashed in because that's tonight's meal. So you have to add something else. And what is that something else? This mystical, magical thing called Minei Tagim. So comes the Gemara Maseches Yuma and says, within this new Mechudish Dikavor, the Rabbi Eliezer, that you've been mashed in, which we don't even know what Minei Tagim are, it's a Raya Brura that Minei Tagim are Chayav B'Sukkah. Why? Because if Minei Tagim wouldn't be Chayav in Sukkah, it wouldn't make any sense that they should serve as the what? As a Tashlumin for the Mitzvah Sukkah. If it's Zaman Fandah, that Minei Tagim requires Sukkah. And what says, you're talking right. From the Lazar sheet of Mashim, Minei Tagim, that means you see a Raya Brura that Minei Tagim are Chayav in Sukkah. Now guess what? We don't pass like Rabbi Elazar's Tashlumin. We don't pass like this whole story, the whole thing we're heard about. But there's one aspect, one kernel of truth here, of halachic truth here, that what? That Rabbi Eliezer was presupposing was what? Is that Minei Tagim or what? Achayim and Sukkah. Now again, we don't have to pass like the rest of Rabbi Eliezer's theories. We don't have to buy into the rest of his own Shtikul Torah. But that one piece of information, that Minei Tagim, Achayim and Sukkah, guess what? Nobody is documented to what? To argue with that. We don't have any mention, we don't have any reason to believe. There's a general approach when you have machlekes and halachas that the assumption is we try to remind the machlek is odif. Tamid chama marim shalom ba'olam, right? That they like to bring more shalom into the world. So a general approach to learning when you have machlekes is that we try to isolate what the nekudas of machlekes is, but except for that one point that they're differing in, they're probably all agreeing to each other. So if we know for a fact that Hilik HaTaner of Eliezer was assuming that Minei Tagim are Chayav in Sukkah, because if they weren't Chayav in Sukkah, it would make no sense they should be the vehicle for Tashlumin. So if we know for a fact that Minat Hagim Achayim and Sukkah and Rabbi Eliezer's model, then we can extract to the Nami Na model. So this is the Raya. This is the whole, it took us 20 minutes to say the Raya. So we learned a little bit of Rabbi Eliezer, learned a little bit about Eil Ben Adul Lekem Chayim, learned a little bit about Kol Tarek Rula, but we have to extract this one teeny weeny weeny Nikuta, that Minat Hagim Atach Achayim and Sukkah. Okay, good. Now we got there. Now what's a real challenge? This was just intro to Shia. What's a real challenge? What in the world of Minat Hagim? What are they? The only thing I can tell you is that they're not bread. That's the only thing I know they're not. That leaves quite a few things out there.
Would you
make
a lay shave
for
his
tashlum? Lay shave, you have a lay shave. I answer the following. Are you going to the mitzvah now?
Why?
What do you mean? You want to contrabiliezi and make a lay shave?
Yeah.
On the night where you're eating your meal outside the sukkah, you can make a lay shave of sukkah.
Yeah, how else did you tashlum?
It's tashlum, but I can make a lay shave of sukkah. That sounds pretty funny. Sounds like Purim, bro.
Would you
have
a
relationship
when you have the
Minhag Yom
and
Sukkah
on a normal day?
Yeah, why not? If you're to the mitzvah, why not? If the Chayav to the mitzvah, why not? So that's why I want to know two things now. Now that I proved to you on the Shabbat out from the Diyuk in Shittas Rabbi Eliezer, I want to know what a Minhag Yom and I want to know how much is the Shear, Kvius, the same as Bren, not the same as Bren. Any ideas what Minhag Yom are? So you saw it in passing in the Marmakomos. You may not have chopped it. So there's a Rashi. Rashi happens to think that the fruit, which is a Mechudish of all Shittas, but there are two other mainstream Shittas. And what Minhag Yom are, you may have noticed, the Mishneh Berurah, the third in the Marmakomos, quotes some Achronim who say, Nochom el hachmir lecho bosa v'dagam agvina chutz l'sukkah. You should try to avoid eating meat and fish and cheese, those kinds of foods, chutz l'sukkah. Everyone knows where that came from? That came from the following. Let's take a look at Chav Zayinim and Aleph. It's my bad, I should have put this title on the Mamre Kamos, I forgot. This Chav Zayinim and Aleph, the Minhag Tagima. So let's pick it up in the third from the bottom line of the title, so the very end of the line, last word of the line. Uminitagim havu, kmo bosor vidagim, ushar dvar mashamalaftim behenesa pas. So Tosfos writes, you know what the definition of minitagim is? It's not bread, that's Farish and Gemara, but it's something very, very close to bread. Literally, physically close to bread. Like something that you put on bread. Lalafes means to shmir, to spread. Foods that are lalafes as a pas, those are the minitagim that Chazal are referring to. Give you some examples. A piece of fish. People make a filter for sandwiches, tuna for sandwiches. Let's say a piece of cheese. People make themselves a grilled cheese sandwich, slice of pizza, right? Those are lafas and pas. Or a piece of meat. People make them a turkey sandwich, chicken salad sandwich. Those are considered to be the lafas and pas. What are some examples of foods that are not lafas and pas? Fruit is not lafas and pas. Potato kugel is not lafas and pas. So the only things that are called Minhag Tagim says Tosfos, it's got to be Malafes as a pas. So what does Tosfos sound like to say conceptually? What makes that Kavua? What makes that Zemar Nachilas Keva? It's almost like Tosfos is saying, like, the real definition of Achilas Keva in Halacha is really truly what? It's really bread. Bread is a meal. So the Teretz is that these kinds of foods that are Malafes as a pas are very meal kinds of foods. Haraya, they come together with bread. If you have things that are not edible together with bread, are not normally eaten with bread, so it's hard to call those a su'udah. Remember, the halacha of sukkah is a function of, you have to eat your su'udahs in the sukkah. The thing that you usually eat at home. So eating at home conjures up that whole image of them sitting down for a meal, sitting down for lunch, sitting down for dinner. It's not a snack. So what's called sitting down for dinner? So Tosfos says, not only is bread itself called sitting down for dinner, but things that accompany the bread are also called sitting down for dinner, and that's a dimin haTorah. Again, we're being magdir the mitzvah deraisa of a superstation. Remember, it's quite hard here, because it's not a din of achila, it's a din of diran yeshiva, like we spoke a lot about yesterday. So Tosfos is saying, from lafas sapas, that's close enough to dira to be chayim in a Torah.
If this is what Minhag Tagim is, why does the Mishnah
Berurah
say it's something that you should be
machir? Wait, who says we pass like this? Okay, not so simple that we pass like this Tosfos yet. All right? other sources, in other areas of halacha, we have this concept that there's somehow a special category called Dvar Ma'alafin and Sapas. That the halacha gives more significance, more credibility to foods that accompany bread, even though I'm not eating them with bread right now. Just the mere fact that the Dvar Ma'alafin and Sapas, that puts them into a higher category of halacha. Bishul Akum, maybe, but yeah. Laf is a pass. Okay, that's interesting. Okay. I didn't think of that one.
Maybe you can say that, like, once you
become
Mosi, you don't
need
to make any other
brachas. Oh, Huchos Brachas. Huchos Brachas, they point that direction. There is a halacha, the Gemara in the sixth Pech of Brachas tells us that when you make a Mosi, so all the foods that are boy machmas asuda are covered by that Mosi. Which is really a very, very startling halacha. Normally, the halacha is that idea that one food could pater another food. We have like ikra tofel. There is such a klal like that, but that's where the two foods are really eating together. So let's say I have my bowl of raisin bread and my milk. So I only make mezonis, assuming the raisins are bought. I can leave out raisins. The Cheerios. I have my Cheerios and milk. Assuming the Cheerios are chamesh min adamat. So I have my Cheerios and my milk. I make mezonis, and I don't have to make a shahak along the milk. The milk is eaten together with the Cheerios. Let's say I have a bowl of Cheerios, and then 10 minutes later, I have a cup of milk. So of course, they have to make a shakal on the milk. Each metaphor doesn't apply, but it's not a chilim b'vasachas. Comes the halacha and tells us, when it comes to the bracha of ha-meitzi ha-suda, all the foods that Abba Machas Suda all covered. So that seems to be above and beyond the regular halachas of Ikka Metaphil. So what's pshat? What's going on? What kind of halacha is that? So the Teretz says that ha-meitzi is a bracha, not just on bread. A motzi is a bracha on what? On the su'uda itself. And therefore, anything that's an integral part of the su'uda is covered by that bracha of a motzi. So what's called an integral part of the su'uda? So we might use the phrase, Dvar Maboy Machmas HaSu'uda. So Rashi on the spot translates that to mean, Dvar Maboy Malafis HaPas. Rashi in Brachas writes that anything that's normally integrated with bread, take a slice of cheese, a piece of fish, a piece of chicken, a piece of turkey, those kinds of foods that are born in the Sapas, they come in together with bread, even though right now I'm not eating it together with bread. I had my challah roll, and now I'm a piece of gefilte fish 10 minutes later. That's covered by the hamoyitzi, because that's part of the su'uda. So that idea that Rashi is writing in Uchaz Brachas, which again, Brachas only a din midi Rabbanon, that's like a ke'im derais, that's like pattern after this kind of an idea, of that Lelavis HaPas is halachically, even Lagavi Dinim Deraisa, such as Sukkah, considered to be really an integral part of the Suda Brah. The problem is, I'm not sure whether Uchaz Brachas is the best place for us to run to, because we have not the pas like that, Rashi. According to Rashi, the only kinds of food that are covered by the Suda or Lelavis HaPas, according to Rashi, it's an unbelievable thing. A person sits down and makes a motzi, and he has a piece of gefilte fish. Okay, he doesn't have to make a bracha on that. And now he has a piece of chicken, doesn't have to make a bracha on that. When he has a piece of potato kugel, when he has a bowl of cholent, what's the din? When was the last time you made a cholent sandwich? Okay, potato kugel sandwich, sounds yummy yum. So according to Rashi, any food that's not bala lafis sabas is not part of the su'udah and therefore would require actually its own bracha. Now, in case you're scratching your head and say, I never heard of that, you're right, because we don't pass like Rashi and it was brachas. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi in Ketzel of Baruch and says that anything that's bol hasbia, anything that comes to fill you up at a meal, even if it's not literally laf es sapas, is also considered to be part of the suda. According to Tosfos, the kugel, the chulin, that's all okay. That's all part of the suda. It doesn't necessarily have to be laf es sapas. What's something that's not b'machas asun? Anyone know?
Dessert.
That's the whole loaded question. So back to that story. So, according to Shittas Rashi, that lelavis hapas is different than uchas brachas, but all other foods, because it's considered to be an integral part of the suda, that sits really nice with this idea of Tosfos, that for sukkah, lelavis hapas is considered to be part of the suda. The problem is that Rashi himself happens to have a different sheet about Mir Tagima. But again, I'm just comparing, not as an absolute lining of sheetahs, just this idea is being expressed that Lavas HaPas is more suda-oriented. Anyone know another area of halacha where Lavas HaPas plays a role, and also that same idea that it's a suda, it's more part of the suda than other things?
Yeah,
There's a sugya beginning of the second bread, which says beitza, about, how do you say the word, by the way, how do you pronounce the word beitza? Who says beya? Who thinks it's beya? When you were a kid, right, the yeshiva, they all told you, yeah, the right way, the yeshivishal way of saying it is beya, right? So there's Rabbi Chananel, in his introduction to the Masechta, he writes a very, very short poem. So he concludes the poem by writing that the Ezra's gedol ha'etza, Aschem Lafarish Maseches. What rhymes with Eitza? Beitza. So you have one of two conclusions. Either Rabbi Chananel called the Masechta Maseches Beitza, or Rabbi Chananel was a miserable poet. He couldn't tell that the two words Be and Eitza don't rhyme. So I don't want to be Moshe Lazar, Rabbi Chananel's the poetic qualities. I think it's more correct to say that he never heard of this Yeshiva Shechumra. He said, Machwarim said it, not Yeshiva Shechumra. Machwarim said it's not right to say Beitza, it's not such a Lashon Nekiya. But the mice, the Rishayim seem to say Beitza. Actually, probably most of the Rishayim didn't call it Beitza either. Most of the Rishayim didn't call it Beya, didn't call it Beitza. What did most of the Rishayim call it? Called Maseches Yontif. When the Rishonim quote the Masechta, very often they call Maseches Yontif, which makes a lot more sense because it is a bizarre thing to name a Masechta after what? After eggs. After the first word in the Masechta. What other Masechta do you know about? Kiddushin talks about Kiddushin. Gittin talks about Gittin. Sukkah talks about, for the most part, about Sukkah, the midst of Sukkah. Right? Sanhedrin talks about it, you know, Sanhedrin. Machas talks about Machas. When did we ever name a Masechta after the first word? Masechas Beitza. The first two, three blocks talk about eggs. And then the Masechta says, 99% of Masechta deals with Ruchas Yontas. That's why most of Rishon called. For some strange reason, it lost its name as Masechas Yontas. It became Masechas Beitza / Be'er. Remember when I was about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old or so. So it was, I think it was the first Siyam I ever went to in my life. So I remember it was in the, we used to daven and Shabbos afternoon was a little shtibl around the corner from my house. So the rabbi's son at the time was making a siyum on Maseches Beitza. So I remember the rabbi got up and he's so proud of his son. He's been learning Maseches Beitza for the last 2 years. He's making a big siyum. I remember he was 7 years old. And he got up and he gave a whole pilpul about a Beitza Shnol to Beyontif, the first sugya. I remember sitting and thinking to myself, I said, what did he just say? He said, for 2 years he's been learning about eggs. I said, what in the world is it possible to talk about that eggs for 2 years? So I've been thinking about that problem for the last 50 years or so. The Torah says, there's nothing, there's not enough to talk about for 2 years. You can talk about for a couple of weeks, but you can talk about for 2 years. So Maseches Beitza is probably not Beitza, not Deya, and the whole thing is wrong. But anyway, back to the story. So there's a din in the beginning of Maseches something that says that when you make an Erev Tavshilev and you have a Yontav going to a Shabbos, so you're not allowed to cook from Yontav to Shabbos with the Rabbanan unless you start the Bishop beforehand, so you have to make an Erev Tavshilev. So what do you make an Erev Tavshilev with? So most of the Rishonim say all you need is a cooked dish. We have a Chumra, we have a Minig that we take a baked dish as well. That was in deference to Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam had a whole unique razzle-dazzle way of reading the first Sugi Maseches Beitza and the second Perek that you need. If you want to cook, you need a cooked dish, and you want to bake, you need a baked dish. So therefore, the Minhag Yisrael became to take both, in deference to Rabbeinu Tam. We don't really follow Rabbeinu Tam, but Tosfos quotes from the Ri. The Ri was Rabbeinu Tam's nephew. The Ri's mother was Rabbeinu Tam's sister. And when the Ri was a little boy, so his parents sent him to the uncle, to live by the uncle, to learn. He should, you know, shimish by his uncle for Rabbeinu Tam. So he grew up in Rabbeinu Tam's home. So the Ri, in those days, he didn't go home for Yontif. It was hard to travel. So he lived by Rabbeinu Tam, lived by his uncle. So he stayed Yontif most of the time for his uncle, by his uncle also. So he writes in Maseches Beitza, Tais calls to the Ri, that Rabbeinu Tam had a practice when he made an Erev, that he would do both pas and a cooked dish together. So the Ri writes, he doesn't think his uncle is right. He said he thinks that he has rayas from the Gemara, Kashas, got 100 kashas against Rabbeinu Tam. So he thinks all the other Rishonim are right against Rabbeinu Tam's Chiddush. He thinks that all you need is a cooked dish. But the Ri writes that when he got older and he got married and he made his own Erev Tavshilins, so he says, Lom la'ani libi, it's a quote, Lom la'ani libi lava divrei doidi. I couldn't violate my uncle's words. He said, here I grew up in my uncle's house, all the Yom Tov, I was a little boy, and my uncle always taught me how to make a bit of time, always showed me how to make an Erev Tavshilin. Then I got older to disagree with him. So it's one thing to disagree with him in learning, but to argue with him in my sister. So when I got older, the Ri says, I also continued to make that Erev, even though I don't think it's right. I don't think it's necessary. So the Ri, the Bali HaTosfos, was the Av, most of the Bali HaTosfos. So all the Tosfos we have, they were all Tamidim and Tamidim and Tamidim in the Ri. So what happened over the years? Nobody wanted to disagree with their Rebbe Yehuda also, so they started to make the challah roll. Now we're 900 years later, so everyone's afraid not to make an after shiur without a challah roll, so we all still make an after shiur without a challah roll. Kacha zeh. So the place get right that the minig Yisrael is, we make after shiurs with challah rolls and eggs or fish, whatever we do. On Pesach, lechad chilam and challah rolls, Jews matzahs, so not just lechad chilam. Someone told me a story once that they got a call on Chol HaMoed years ago, before there were caller IDs and caller recall, you know, redial and that kind of stuff. So when somebody called you, you had no idea what you were talking to. So somebody called them up late one night on Chol HaMoed Pesach, and they said somebody died, and they want to know, do we make a Sudas Avros? It was the first meal you make after the Levaya. So do we make a Sudas Avros on Chol HaMoed? So the person says, yeah, make a Sudas Avros on Chol HaMoed. So, okay. So what do we serve at the Sudas Avros? So the person was half asleep, the rabbi. So he said, bagels and eggs. That's the minigun, man. Bagels and eggs. And then they hung up the phone. And then 2 minutes later, they realized, what? It's Chol HaMoed Pesach. The guy who called wasn't even from. So he said, he's sure that the person went to the store and ate bagels and eggs. Because the rabbi told him. The rabbi said, you have to be very, very careful when you enter Shabbos. So I have to be careful. I said that on Chol HaMoed, when you make after shiur and you make challah rolls, that's only on Yom Tov, not on Pesach. Pesach, we use matzah. It's fine. So, back to the story. So the Gemara says that the tafshil that you use for an erev tafshilin, you can't use potato kugel. It has to be something that's what? What's the lashon of Gemara? There you go. Lalav is a pas. It has to be something that's bought that accompanies a sandwich, something that you would normally make into a sandwich. So that's why you can use an egg, you make an egg salad sandwich, you can filter fish, make a filter sandwich, a piece of chicken, you cut up, slice it up, make it into a chicken salad. So those are foods that allow you can't take a piece of potato kugel, you can't use the lakshin kugel. So not because those kugels are not chashuv, they're very chashuv, but what are those kugels not? What are they, everybody said, what are they not? They're not really suda. And if the shilin is, you have to start to prepare your suda. The goal of the after shul is to start your, not just time to start your cooking process, but to begin your sudas, to cook your sudas Shabbos, to begin your sudas Shabbos, maybe Od Yom. And then Midrabban will let you continue sudas Shabbos to prepare it on Yom Tov itself. So you have this whole idea that's emanating that Lavis Tapas is suda oriented kind of things. And that impacts, according to Rashi, it was Brachas, that impacts it was after Shilin, and that impacts here as well, in terms of the chasukah, that according to one whole group of Rishonim, the Balei Tosfos, anything that's a lavas tapas is automatically called a potential davash kavua. But guess what? Notwithstanding all of this, so if you take a look, at the second of my mekamis in the Shulchan Aruch. It's the fourth line. To the fifth line, I'm sorry. V'tavshil la'osim e'chameishas minim im kaveh alav chashiv kebetzach sukkah. We spent a half hour in the Shulchan Torah, and it's not even passed in the Halacha Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch quotes that you know what kinds of foods need sukkah? Bread needs sukkah, and you know what else? Chameishas minei dagan. What we call the mezainis kinds of foods, and not even all, not rice. Rice is not chameishas minei dagan. It has to be wheat, barley, etc. Those kind of foods require sukkah. What is the Shulchan Aruch telling us, everybody saying? How do we translate the word minetagima? To mean mezainistika foods, chameishas minetagim. We don't accept this taisus lahalacha. Who is the argument? Who is the ba'pluk that this taisus is a rush? It's a rush, a sukkah that says this. It says that chameishas minetagim, yeah, other kinds of foods, no. This is an unbelievable machlokes. This is such a fundamental machlokes. Anyone understand just how relevant this machlokes is halacha l'maisa for us? According to Tosfos, you cannot eat chicken out of the sukkah. According to the Rosh, you can. I get this call all the time. A guy's at work, a guy's at this, he can't go to the sukkah. He wants to know, what can I eat outside the sukkah? According to the Shulchan Aruch, you can basically eat supper outside the sukkah. You can have a piece of chicken, you can have salad, you can have a bowl of soup, you have a piece of potato kugel, you can have fruit at the end, and you have an entire 10-course meal, as long as you're careful of two things. You don't wash, you don't have a and just stay away from the pastas and that kind of food. And stay away from the extra cake for dessert, if I don't need it anyway, too much calories in the whole night, right? So according to the Shittas HaRosh, which is the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins, We just knocked out everything out of the box. Only mezonis. And my high mezonis. Manishtana mezonis. Why is mezonis? What made mezonis so choshev, so special? So, we can also look a little bit in Nuchas Brachas, that mezonos has a much more significance in halacha than other kinds of foods. And when we bring me a raya, how do you know mezonos is much more Suda-ish oriented? So you don't even need pasta because I'm not even talking about pasta because that's really a new category. A bowl of pasta. What's about pasta that somehow has a greater level of Suda? It gets... Oh, so that's tricky. So if you convey the suit on pasta, you don't. If you convey the suit on cake, then you do. So we're going to get to that chilut a little bit later on. But I just want to know mizonos, the chamesh bin dogma versus others, the bracha chorona that you make is fundamentally different. I always find it very, very strange. You can sometimes sit down and have mamish a meal you stuff to the gills, right? The guy started his meal, let's say, he started with some sushi, okay? We'll describe it differently. Come on, you guys know Shmuel is supposed to be the night. Come on. Well, what did he eat? I'm just trying to think of the Marina Shmuel. Okay? So he has a shtickle duck, right? He's got his out meatballs. Okay, we're still rolling. What else? He's got his shawarma, not the bread, the wash, right? Oh, just with the shawarma pot. Okay, you know, his wife's there, so when she's checking out his plate, he throws some salad on just to make it look, you know, a little healthier, okay? So he's got his salad, you know what else?
Steak.
What? He's got his steak. He's got his Hawaiian chicken. He's got his sesame chicken. He's got his older chickens. You know, more cholesterol. Right? He's mamish turkey. He's got his carving stations. You know, he's mamish the guy has been yotze every single station. Except he stayed clear from the mezonos stations. What does he do at the end of this whole story? This morning, what'd you have for breakfast? Bowl of cereal? What'd you make at Bracha Charena? Assuming it was I had a bowl of cereals for to make? Yeah, Alan Michia. We shouldn't think of it, right? It's a crazy thing. You know? The guy stuffed to the gills for the next 6 months and he makes it Bracha Charena. Yeah, that's it. Kachazah. And I'll tell you a secret. According to some Rishonim, that may be a din deraisa. There's a bracha chrona in deraisa called Birchas Hamazon, Vechalta v'Savata. There's a big machlekes of Rishonim about, is that chiyuv deraisa of Yechalta v'Savata only on bread? Because the Torah says, Eretz Hashem, a little bit to talk about lechem, and a few psukim before, Vechalta v'Savata talks about lechem. Another Rishonim says, Lav Dovka lechem. Eretz chita sayra could also be deraisa. If you have a bowl of cereal, and you're really stuffed to the gills on the bowl of cereal, you have to bench. So chameshus midei dogon is different than other foods. It's just objectively different than halacha. Anyone knows another interesting nuance, little quirk about chameshus midei dogon? Because it gets a bracha chorona v'alamichya that may change its status and makes it much more suda oriented and actually relevant for sukkah, much more house oriented. Very good, excellent. So let's say the guy who ate his 17th course at the marina and then he bails out before the chuppah. So he's driving home and he's halfway back to the bridge and then he really forgot to make a brayer nefeshes. What does he do? So he makes a brayer nefeshes right then and there. What about the guy who had his bowl of cereal in the morning in his dorm room? He comes to the base medrash, he's like, I forgot the alamichim. What's the din? He's got to go back. What do you have to go back for? So Gemara in Pesachim says there are certain foods that ta'unim bracha charebim koimam. Why is that? There was a hamotzi and mezainis. Why did ta'unim bracha charebim koimam? Because they are much more achilas what? Kevadikadinim. Because when you sit down and have an achilas keva, you have to think of bracha charoina in your makam keva. That means it's the end of the suda. The bracha charoina is the end of the suda. When you have food on the run, it can be quantitatively a lot of food. And it could, you know, gastronomically fill you up more than the bowl of cereal. But the halacha gives a certain significance to those mezainous kinds of foods. The Torah puts them up at its own tier, it's in its own world, the mezainous kinds of foods. And that impacts Zuchus Brachas. And now the Rosh is telling us, that impacts Zuchus Sukkah. So all of a sudden you have this very, very strange phenomenon that's developing. That Mizonos becomes the criteria, according to Shulchan Aruch and the Rosh, of Achilas Keva. And that's the Midat Tagib of Chazal. And then, again, we have to still discuss volume, the quantity. We didn't get anywhere near that yet. But we've identified as a species of food, as a type of food, so that's much different than the chicken and kugels, the potato kugels, and soups and salads. So how do we pass it? So the Shulchan Aruch pass it like the Rosh. It's on this that the Mishnah Berurah meant to say, in the end of the third member of the Mishnah Berurah quotes, Yiskimu kam achroim b'chayolim, and others will say, that's as a lechet chil in deference to the Tosis. But the ik mikud, we don't really pass that to Tosis. So everybody said, what have we developed so far for Shia today? We haven't said the word quantity yet. We're still working on the qualitative. We're trying to identify kinds, categories of foods that are chayim and sefer. So we know for a fact bread, that we don't need too much chachma for that. The Gemara says that the favorite bread. And we know for a fact, Mini Tagima also. How did we get there? We get there from a roundabout thanks to Rabbi Elazar Shifrin. We don't pass like, but we finally figured that out. The Mini Tagima is chayim. What are Mini Tagima? We have no idea. We have two approaches, really three, but two primary approaches in Mishnayim. One highlighting Malafas the pass, and one highlighting Bezonos. Has anyone caught on to almost a theme that I've been highlighting today? I've been focusing on today. I didn't just say, you know, I could have finished this sugya 40 minutes ago. I could have said that, okay, some Rishayim say it's, lots of pass, other Rishayim say it's Bezonos, let's move on. Let's talk quantity. So I spent 40 minutes talking quality first. Anyone notice the theme I've been saying? When I presented one shita, what did I do? I didn't just say a shita. What did I assume? What did I do? I used it as an opportunity to what? To branch out, to try to familiarize you with the method we're trying to do here. There's a little bit of there's a method to this madness. I gave you examples of what? All of this halacha, right? I didn't just make a statement in a vacuum. I said, oh, by the way, this theme that's appearing here, ooh, this is like, oh, by God, we have a little bit like that in Nefes Brachas, a little bit like that in Nefes Shilin. We have a little bit like that in Brachas, Rishon, Brachas, Chorona. Like, I'm trying to show you, why am I doing that for? What am I accomplishing with that? I seem to be highlighting, I'm trying to be medayek in what I'm doing. I seem to be highlighting that these categories, the Midat Hagim, whatever you think they are very halachic in nature. And there's almost like an objective criteria as to what's called Achilas Kev, what's called Achilas Aroi. And you have to keep like a half-baked eye open to other areas of halacha to see if Midat Hagima, if Lavas Apas is important in area X, Y, and Z, that makes sense, that's important to Chasukah. If Mizonos plays a significant role and you got a bench, and you got to make it Bim Kaimam, those halachas indicate that there's something special, something unique about these kinds of foods. I've been putting a lot of emphasis on the world of halacha today. Anyone want to ask me a kasha? I would almost ask a steer, like from yesterday's shiur to today's shiur. Just think, train a little think. This whole concept, whole Mishnah, Ochel Nechilas Aroi Chutz V'Sukkah V'Tchilas Kavadisht. We asked the question yesterday. What was that question yesterday? What was the opening question yesterday? Remember? Where did this come from, this idea? Like, what's the source of all this? So we came up with that theory. The Rishonim came up with the theory of what? So what Teshuvah Yom Kippur? What does that mean? How is that Teshuvah Yom Kippur? Why? Because ultimately we sometimes eat outside also. We do take foods to eat on the run. So any kind of food that we generally eat on the run, we're okay with doing that outside the sukkah. Any kind of food that's more house-oriented, we will not allow you to do that in the sukkah. That was the whole theory of yesterday. If that was the case, then what should the answer to the question be, which foods are chayv in sukkah, which foods are not chayv in sukkah? Why are we learning Hilchos Brachos and Hilchos Erev Tefshilin? What should we be doing instead of spending the last 40 minutes of the shiur? What should we be doing?
Defining
Achilas Karayim. Well, we're trying to define Achilas. We're trying to define what foods. We haven't said the word volume yet. So if I were to ask you, let's, as a shiur together, let's do a study. Let's try to figure out what kinds of foods or aroidika foods, and one kind of foods are kevadika foods. So I said, okay, great, let's do that. We're going to learn Maseches Brachas together, we're going to learn Maseches Beitza together, we're going to learn, and we're going to analyze different shittas and rishonim about what's called this one. I think we're wasting our time. Sorry to report. You know what we should be doing? We should not even be in Shilim today. You know what we should be doing? We should go on a field trip. A Shilim outing. Where should we go? We should go out to the street. We should stand on 186th, if you can get past the construction and the fixing the roads. 186th in Amsterdam. Again, this is assuming that MTA kids are a fair game for this experiment. I have serious hesitation on that, because when you see a guy eating his, you know, Golan sandwich walking in the street. But okay, let's assume we're dealing with regular people. Okay, nothing bad at MTA, I'm sorry. I don't mean that in a bad way. So we should stand on, you know, 186th in Amsterdam and just watch. And we should watch what kinds of foods do people eat on the run today and what they don't. And I'll tell you a secret, I'm not so sure we're going to get the same conclusions that we had from this grandiose experiment and learning today. Rabbi said, what I'm really asking is a fundamental lumdish question. Is the Chilas Arai, Chilas Akeva, are those halacha categories? Or are those Metzias categories? Yesterday's Shia seemed to point in the direction that they're really Metzias categories. And today's Shia is focusing on the fact, hey, wait a second, what do you mean? It's got to be a Irvin, it's got to be Brachis, it's got to be this, it's got to be that. It's got to be Mekiris, give me Sheklovis, give me Halchim, give me Hadoris. Now, those two different approaches are so radically different because, you know, we have a klal. One of the Yigim we Koryam Muna is, Zoyis at Torah lo tehe muchlefes. The Torah doesn't change. What that does not mean is that the Metzias doesn't change. Metzias changes all the time. So therefore, it could be that something that was quote unquote Psak Halacha 20 years ago may not be Psak Halacha today. Not because the Halacha has changed one iota, but that the Metzias has become different. I'm answering a different Shaila. It's a different. I'll give you a perfect motion right out of the Romans 7%. There's a Mishnah in the Sefer Shabbos that says that if you cook in the sun, that's not called Bishul and Shabbos. But in that Torah, for sure or not, maybe even in the Rabbanu, cook this on top of Bishul. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva that doesn't apply anymore. What do you mean it doesn't apply anymore? So it's a Mishnah, a Kfiro, it doesn't apply anymore. So Rabbi Moshe explains, look at the sugya, the way Rabbi Moshe learned up the sugya. The reason why Bishul Bacham is not called Bishul is because it's not normal. That's not the Derech HaOlam to cook. And Hukha Shabbos is a big, big function of what's normal. Says Rabbi Moshe, what if you live in a world which you live in a culture that has solar heating? Or what if you live in a world that uses microwave ovens? Microwave ovens is like the halakha equivalent of cooking without a flame. It says Rav Moshe, in the old days, back in the days of the Mishnah, to cook without a flame was crazy. One mishugan in the world would fry his egg in the sun. The average person would make a fire. What if his man has that? Nobody makes a fire. Everyone just drills things into the sun. Everything throws things into the microwave. Everyone heats up their water and their solar or heating in there in Israel. Says Rav Moshe, so then Bishul, the Chava becomes Deraisa. What, Torah changed? Kfira. What's the answer? Torah didn't change. The halacha was never said that Bishul Chava is Mutar. What was the halacha said? When it's done, what? Bishul Shaloa? Bishul Shaloa Kederach is Mutar. But once it becomes Kederach, so then it changes. And then of course it changes. The halacha didn't change. The reality changed. And now the halacha in turn changes in response to that reality. So this is a critical question, because if you think that Achilas Arai and Achilas Keva, this whole Mishnah in Maseches Sukkah, this whole sugya, which is a Shalom Adin Deraisa, is some kind of a subjective statement, that, namely, there was no halacha Moshe Mishinai as to what's called in the sukkah, out of the sukkah. You know what the halacha Moshe Mishinai was? One word, Taduru. That's it. You go decide and figure out, how do people eat? Is this the kind of a food that people insist on doing in their house? If it is, so then it's chayvet sukkah. Not. Once you magged it halacha like that, like we did yesterday, then what are you opening yourself up for? A total change. It means whatever it says in the Shulchan Aruch, and don't misquote me in this one, whatever it says in the Shulchan Aruch is irrelevant. I had a Talmud in the regular year, Asher Becker. So some of you may remember him from before your days in Kol. Okay, anyway. So Asher Becker used to make a shtick for us, that he would collect every comment that we would make in the course of Shiur if taken just out of context, you know, just chop out those three words, he would collect it, file it away, and then on Purim he would play it all for us. So that would be like a typical line of his. Would say, whatever it says in Shulchan Aruch is irrelevant. You know, can he even take that out of context? And he would say, Rav Solovsky just paskin, whatever it says in Shulchan Aruch is irrelevant. Okay? So, if you're telling me that a Roy in Keva is more like we presented yesterday, measured by the MTA kids, what they eat on the run or not, so then what am I kia with Zaynus, Nishbazans, Yemzans, Nishbazans, Nishbazans? What does that mean for us? Tachlis, today. Bottom line, does a normal person eat chicken with potato kugel, with salad, you know, with a fruit dessert? Do people do that in their house? Or are those the kinds of things people do standing on the street corner? What do you think? You better answer right. In the house. Therefore, maybe you have to do that in the sukkah. Not as the Midas Chassidus or the Mishnah Berurah, as a Din D'Oraisa. No, that's a pretty serious change. That's a change l'chumra. That would be a humongous change l'chumra. It would basically take the whole statement of the Shulchan Aruch and just toss it out the window. But I'll give you an interesting kula. How many people do you think on the run eat a muffin? Most people do, right? Well, nobody thinks you're crazy. You run out of lazy bean and you know you're munching on your muffin on the way out. Well, this is crazy. Guess what? If you want to do that, what? Outside of the sukkah. Maybe it's okay. So that would be a loaded question here. That if we're going down the route of yesterday's mahalach, of there is no halacha mesina, what is or what is not even the sukkah. It's just the function of dira, of what people do in the houses, that could change according to the time and place. And that's like Rabbi Moshe's microwave and soul heating changing. The halacha didn't change, the mitzvahs changed. And yet, if you look in the Gedalia Poskim, the pashtus of Dvarim is that nobody says that. The Mishnah Berurah Zichah doesn't say that. Nowhere in Mishnah Berurah Chasukah does he make such a horror that, hey, wait a second, things may change, bein l'kula, bein l'chumra. The Chayodim was, at the most the Chayodim said is that try l'chadchila, not eat chicken out of the sukkah. Who in the world in the days of the Chayodim was walking in the streets eating a piece of chicken? Go stand in Danzig in the 1700s and go see who's sitting and having chicken and kugel and sholod outside, sitting in the street. And yet the Chayodim, the worst he said was, okay, l'chadchila. The biggest chum of the Mishnah Berurah Rai was this, if you can, matoil, yes, it's ace, make sure to eat your chicken out. So this is a tremendous breakthrough. This idea that the Poskim has somehow accepted this idea that is almost like objective criteria that are written in stone. And the stone is either Mizonius or Lafayette Pass, whatever you think the stone is, but there's some bottle, some red line in the sand. These food, yeah, and these food, no. And I don't care what's going on in the world, and I don't care what's going on in the upstairs. Maybe I'm not running experiments, as much as that. These are halachic criteria. So that's what today's Shia was assuming. Because today's Shia was saying these are halachic criteria, and I'll show you that in the world of halacha, these categories make sense. I didn't make them up in a chasukah. These are pre-existing halachic criteria. These are more Seuda-ish foods than others are. And again, whether you like the Lafayette Zapas model, you like the model of Mizonis, that's up, you know, like we showed you. We passed the Mikra did one way, it was the Chumah the other way. So I just want everyone to understand that the Sugi V'chilis HaRoi V'chilis Keva almost has like two different mindsets to it. Yesterday was one kind of mindset which we thought was right, and now we're taking a backpedaling a little bit and seeing that the Poskim don't seem to go down that route. They seem to take these categories as real. So Baruch Hashem, we've identified the categories. What have we haven't even touched yet? We haven't even said a word about it yet. The quantity. We have no idea what the quantity is. And we would guess it's Kabeit Tzaviyoi. That's just an educated guess, which is may or may not be right. So for me, so tomorrow we're going to try to move on the quantity part and then see how does this play out for us on mice and bottom line, all this settles. What are we supposed to be in the sukkah and what can we get away with in the sukkah? So tomorrow we'll try to put the final questions. Okay.